On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Writer and educator Ann Dowsett Johnston grew up with an alcoholic mother. Ann thought liquor was something she'd be able to deal with, and for decades, she did. It took years to realize alcohol had become her demon, and after she went into recovery, she applied her skills as a journalist and her experience to writing Drink, the Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol. Ann Dowsett Johnston came to Baltimore over the winter, and she discussed girls, women, and drinking at the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. While Dowsett Johnston was in town, she and the center's director, Dr. David Jernigan, came by the studio. I began our conversation by asking her first to share with us how she became an alcoholic.
It was very late in life. I was fine in my 20s, 30s, and 40s, and in my 50s, I had a bad patch of depression, and I used alcohol to numb, and it surprised me as much as anybody else, and my best friend would claim she had no idea. So I was a hidden, isolated drinker, and my son blew the whistle on me, and I stopped.
Stopped cold?
Stopped cold. Stopped cold, went to rehab in the States, and stopped cold 5 years ago.
You mentioned in the States. You live in Canada.
I'm a Canadian, right.
Where do you live?
I live in Toronto. I write in Toronto, and I love traveling, so I'm traveling a lot with the book.
To quote the title of your book, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol, is that different now than when you were growing up?
The intimacy with alcohol?
Whatever that intimate relationship is, as you see it.
The way I see it is that men typically have a very social relationship with alcohol. They typically go to the sports bar, drink with other men. They may drink with a different group of friends once they've begun to abuse alcohol. But women tend to be isolated drinkers when they get into trouble. We tend to hide it. There's a lot of shame for all people around drinking too much, but for women especially. And I think the intimacy is we turn to it as a lover. We turn to it as a friend. We turn to it as a way to escape from our problems, and it can be a very dangerous and slippery slope when one starts to do those things.
Much of what you said, although you say it with more insight, I have heard, I think, most of my life about women drinking alone, and I'm trying to understand if there's something different going on in the last decade or so.
Right. I think there's something profoundly different. I think alcohol has become the modern woman's steroid, enabling her to do the heavy lifting involved in what I see as a socioeconomic revolution that has not unfolded totally. So in my case, come home from a very demanding job, carrying the groceries, chop the vegetables, pour a glass of wine, very common habit. You're heading into a second shift of overseeing homework, perhaps going back to work, and many, many women will have a drink while they're preparing the dinner, have another drink while they're eating dinner. And for years, that was my story, and it didn't turn into anything more until the rubber hit the road for me. And so whether it's book clubs, whether it's gathering with other women, women relate to that story. I think that's number one. Number two is we're being marketed to very heavily, and we have wines like Girls Night Out wine, Mummy Juice, yes, Happy Bitch, unfortunate name, and Skinny Girl Vodka. We are being told that the market is pink and the market is there for us. And we're also told that if we're sophisticated, we know our wines. If we're an adult, we should be able to hold our liquor. What we aren't told is that while democratically we're equal, metabolically and hormonally we're not. We are not able to absorb alcohol the way men can.
And you've revealed, I think, that both of your parents were alcoholic.
Right.
So what role in this whole picture does one's body, one's genetics play compared to the marketing?
Well, they still haven't proven that there's a gene for alcoholism. I think many scientists whom I've spoken to believe that there will be proof. But there isn't proof yet. There's predisposition in terms of the family you grow up in, for sure. In my case, it was the thing that I really was determined to outfox. My mother was a classic 1960s alcoholic, mixing Valium with cocktails and a stay-at-home mom. And there were many who did exactly what she did. And I was absolutely determined that I would not end up in the same place. And I didn't end up in the same place. I did not end up staying at home and drinking at the day in the day and behaving the way she did. And therefore, I caught myself, luckily, early, and I caught myself at a different stage of drinking. Where does risky drinking cross into alcoholism? It's a fuzzy line.
That's Ann Dowsett Johnston, author of Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol. Here on Maryland Morning on 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Dr. David Jernigan, Director of the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth at Johns Hopkins. So Ann Dowsett Johnston describes women, adult women, using alcohol as a tool to be more effective in life, or at least thinking it may lead there. You spend a lot of your time studying alcohol in young people. Is it a kind of tool for teenagers also?
It is the thing to do. Part of what advertising and marketing do is they seek to normalize a product. And what alcohol marketers have done in the last 15 years is to normalize this product in the lives of young women. And we study the exposure of young people to alcohol marketing. Our latest research is finding that the brands that are most popular among young women are 5.5 times more likely to miss their target audience in their advertising. They expose age group below 21 more effectively than they expose any of the age groups above 21. This is part of the problem that we see with alcohol marketing and young people generally, and then specifically women. The other issue here is the range of products at this point that are oriented towards women and young women, things like Pucker, which has advertising that is basically the TV ads are entirely a bunch of female lips with people partying behind them, but all you can see is the lips.
Okay, let me try to understand that. I think of women in alcohol ads as essentially bait to attract masculine eyeballs. And so if there's an ad that shows a lot of feminine lips, is that trying to lure female drinkers?
There's two things that happen, and alcohol ads are having a bit of cognitive dissonance, if you will, because there's still that whole segment that appeals to men. And the women there, they're dressed like the bottle, they look like the bottle, they often are, they represent the product. You drink this, you literally get the female. But for the things for women, there's social modeling, a tremendous amount of social modeling going on. That's what's going on with those female lips and all the women behind them partying. In order to have a good time, you have to drink. That's the message over and over again in this advertising.
I'd like to hear one of those ads. Smirnoff Whipped has a TV ad.
Tonight, I choose Whipped. Because vodka never felt this good.
Whipped cream flavor vodka from Smirnoff.
The women in the modern ads, the images are all of power, of agency, of the power of choice. They're very feminist in a certain way, except, you know, as Anne's story so powerfully tells, this is power that comes with a tremendous potential downside. Not only the health effects, things like cancer, unwanted pregnancy, greater susceptibility to sexual violence, sexually transmitted diseases, and so on, but also the possibility of addiction. You'll never hear anything about any of that in an alcohol ad.
Is targeting women mostly a high-end phenomenon? Is this something expensive brands are doing, or are brands at all levels doing this?
I think you see it at all levels. Certainly, it is led by, and the largest marketing budgets are going to be for the more expensive brands. But we see it across the board. We see it particularly for two categories of products. One is the flavored malt beverages. Some of us call those Alcopops, things like Smirnoff Ice and Bacardi Silver. So that's the low end of the market. We think of those as kind of the training wheel drinks. And then for the vodkas, for Absolut, for Sky, for Smirnoff Vodka, and then finally for Patron, which is, you know, highly aspirational.
And Dowsett Johnston, what goes through your mind when you see or hear an ad like the one we heard?
Well, I'm going to poach David Jernigan's wonderful line. This is Virginia Slims in a bottle. It's giving you the notion that this is something to relax with. This is something to celebrate with. This is going to make me feel glamorous. While the age group that David's talking about is looking for a way to, for a social lubricant, and the notion for young women is that you will have a great social life. We haven't given people an option to choose a different life. As David says, we've normalized it to a degree that and we are using, I think, campus life, campus drinking, to normalize it for people. And what is astonishing is young women who used to slow down after graduation in their 20s, in their 30s, are not slowing down.
We also know it's very difficult to tell young people of either gender to do anything. And this is where the imbalanced message environment that young people are in plays such an important role. Pretty much all the messages they're getting about alcohol are coming from the advertisers themselves. We know from tobacco how helpful it was to get counter ads out there, to get counter messages, to get, whether it's a ratio of, you know, one counter ad for every four or five TV ads for the product, which is what we had for tobacco in the early 70s, or, you know, these state-led campaigns like California, Massachusetts, and Florida did, or the National Truth Campaign. You've got to show the manipulation. You've got to show that there are marketers behind these things. We can do media literacy, and there's some evidence that media literacy, teaching kids how to interpret these ads, can be helpful. But teaching the millions of American kids media literacy every single year is going to be a high resource, high effort proposition. Be much better if we could get some decent counter messaging from the public health perspective out there.
I really appreciate you both talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sheila.
Dr. David Jernigan is director of the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth at Johns Hopkins. And Dowsett Johnston is the author of Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol. We've got more information on the Center for Alcohol Marketing and Youth and more information about Ann Dowsett Johnston's book, all on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast. Up next, the surreptitious style questions of our colleagues. Stay tuned to 88.1.